the need for the poor and the needy, God.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to The Finer Point. We have a very special guest this evening who's going to give us some factual information on Father's grace. And we're going to try and come up against some of all these fear and doom preaching going on. Welcome to the broadcast, David.
Thank you, Dorothy. What a joy to be with you, and thank you so much for playing one of my favorite songs, although I'm sitting here in tears. I'm glad this is only audio and not video. I'd be a little embarrassed, but that song stirs me every time I hear it. It's a sort of a theme song for us in our missionary work.
Can we start with explaining to everyone what you do? I mean, someone just posted
in the chat.
I love to live on a boat. Of course, I prefer the motor to the sailboat myself, but, you know, everyone has their own things that they like. I don't know why I'm so distracted this evening. So you are missionaries to the Caribbean.
Yes, let me give kind of a capsule of how we got started, what we've been doing. I'll do it briefly. About 25 years ago, when Hurricane Hugo was hitting the island of Hispaniola, that's where Dominican Republic and Haiti are, I had a family in the area that I was pastoring that was very concerned, wanting to do something to help out with a relief effort, bringing food, bringing supplies to Haiti. And so I assisted them with their project of trying to acquire a large commercial boat and then load it up with food and make that journey. In that process of doing that, it just stirred up my heart how much people are hurting in this world, even though as a pastor I was doing my own share of good in my community. But, you know, sometimes if you look past the front yard and past the city limit sign and you just, you know, get out into a global picture of what's happening, and especially today, my goodness, with everything going on in the Middle East and in the Far East, you know, if you just realize you are and how good you got it and that really in your hands is a means of helping somebody desperate, you might be their only hope, you would be amazed at how God will speak to your heart. And he spoke to us. This was in 1989. I obtained an old wooden sailboat that was in terrible shape. In fact, it had sunk to the bottom of the Cape Fear River in North Carolina. Someone learning about its history, it was a very old boat that had a classic history, he brought it up to the surface and didn't do much more with it. I ended up with that boat, worked on it for a year and a half, and set sail to go to Haiti myself. Even though it was now well after the hurricane, I was just driven to do whatever I could do to help people in trouble. And it was quite a venture to undertake because I had several children, young and living with us, and we had, we had to go out to do something we had not really done before. And, you know, that is a test of faith for anybody. But we began our journey. Although we got into a tropical storm off the coast of Georgia and North Florida, it drove us in near the shores where we ran over the end of the jetty of the St. Mary's River in the middle of the night in 10-foot seas, ripping the bottom of the boat off. The boat went over on its side, and we hung on to the wreckage. Fortunately, it was a wooden boat, so it didn't completely sink, but it, you know, there was nothing more we could do but hang on and hope that our frantic Mayday call on the radio was heard and being responded to. Coast Guard, in trying to find us, ran into trouble. They ran into the South Jetty and disabled themselves, and the Navy was out looking for us. It was not until early morning light that a shrimp boat found us, pulling us off the wreck, getting us in to shore. But that was the beginning of our mission work, which is now over 25 years old, and I had no idea that that was only one small adventure of many adventures to come. But I have absolutely no regret, because in these 25 years, we have had somewhere around 1,100 people give their hearts to the Lord. About two-thirds of those are children and teenagers. We do a lot of child evangelism with puppets and things like that. We have been involved in rescue ourselves. We have helped to save the lives of 20 Cubans on two different occasions who were lost adrift at sea, literally saving their lives. We have helped in other situations, and I think that during the course of our conversation over the next couple of hours, we'll probably get into more description of all those, because each experience was so awesome. It gave me a chance to really see the power of our Father in heaven, what he can do when you yield yourself to him and you say, Lord, I am your hands, I am your feet, this is your heart inside my chest. And, you know, we have had so many awesome experiences only because at the very beginning we decided, you know, we're comfortable, we're secure, and we are doing a few good things, but really, he deserves more than that. This world is in great trouble. Maybe we should step out in faith, and here we are. In fact, I'm kind of smiling as I said that, because now the boat we're living on, the third sailboat that we've had during this journey, is called Faith. So when I tell someone I'm just living on faith, I'm just traveling by faith, and I mean that literally, my sailboat is called Faith.
That is awesome. So what is your response to all these doom and gloom things and all the scary things that are coming up? You know, in scriptural prophecy, there if you don't have a, you know, if you look at it in the flesh, it's pretty scary. What is your response to people who are afraid of all these things coming upon the earth right now? What do you say to them?
Well, you know, there's a very important scripture that's right in the middle of the one great sermon that Jesus preached, and that is, of course, the Sermon on the Mount. It's in Matthew chapter 6, the verse I'm thinking of, the last verse of that chapter. You know, first he says that we are to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto us. But he also says, take no thought for tomorrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient today is the evil thereof. Now, that's the Old English version. That's the King James rendering of his words. But it's clear enough that what he's saying to everyone is listening. And God bless all of you who are out there who are listening right now. I thank you that you have tuned in. Some of you I know have been probably regular, and I hope that this will be a very special time together. But for someone who hasn't even heard this broadcast before, or perhaps you're just searching for answers, I really pray that God will say something very personal to you today in this broadcast. The personal thing I desire to say is just trust him, just one day at a time. And that's exactly what this verse is saying. Take no thought for tomorrow. In other words, not that we should not plan ahead, look ahead. We should not, you know, make some provision for our children's college careers or what might happen if the power goes off tomorrow. We should at least have a generator somewhere in the garage. That's not the kind of thing it's appealing. Here he's trying to say, listen, you can only handle one thing at a time, one day at a time. Just give me your best right now. That's all I'm asking for. Give me your heart right now, and I will give you the best in return. And this is, I think, the only counsel that I can offer that you can count on, no matter how the future unfolds before us. And I agree with you. I agree with other broadcasts like yours that are trying to make us aware that many things are going on behind the scene, not being reported. Issues are great at this time. It may escalate. It may not. We just don't know. But I do know where I'm sitting right now. I do know what this day is like for me. I do know that the Lord is right beside me, and that I have been able to count on him every day until now. I have every reason to believe I can count on him every day going forward.
Thank you for that. That was very uplifting. Do you remember the first time that you had to depend on Father for some supernatural intervention in your travels?
Yeah, thank you for reminding me. I got saved on February 8th, 1973. I remember that because it's the day after my birthday, which is February the 7th. And I was born into this world in 1953. I was born again unto the Lord in 1973. So it's easy for me to remember, you know, 20 years apart, one day apart. But when the Lord came into my heart, I was in the U.S. Army at that time, but I was also a drug dealer. I had a drug habit for a while, and I was really living a very precarious life at a lot of risk. 6 months before I met the Lord, I was at a rock concert in Würzburg, Germany. I was a soldier in Germany, and I went to this rock concert with a lot of young friends. I was, because I was a drug dealer, I had all of this stuff, and I don't want to describe it in detail. It's a life that I rather not remember, but it is a part of my testimony. As a result of an accidental overdose, I was dead for almost 25 minutes, and I could go into a description of that experience. It's profound. We're going to leave some of these things on the table in case they are appropriate later in the program. There's plenty of time to talk, but I want to get to the main point that when I got saved that night, God set me completely free of every kind of addiction that I had that, you know, was associated with that previous life. He gave me an altogether new life. And yet, within 2 hours, after going around the base with the several young Christian men who introduced me to the Lord and sharing the gospel with people that were standing on guard duty in the snow, it was winter in Germany, snow on the ground, and after all these wonderful things that were happening, I was in this Christian experience with all I had. It was awesome. Everything you would expect a biblical born-again experience to be. And yet when I got back to my barracks room, I went upstairs and someone grabbed me in the hallway and said, look, this certain man was waiting to speak to you. And I went down the hall, went into their small private room, a room that was just for two men. Most of the rooms were larger. As soon as I stepped in the room, he grabbed me, this other fellow, big guy, grabbed me and threw me up against the wall in a way that my feet barely touched the floor. Just the toes were barely touching the floor, almost like supernatural strength. Now, he was a drug addict, a man who had bought a lot of drugs from me and in turn was selling some, using most. With this supernatural strength, he had me by my collar up against this wall and a knife right underneath my left side of my chin, and it was piercing the skin a little. I could feel it, piercing the skin a little. And he said something, and I'll have to explain what it means, but he said, I heard you turn pig. Now, somehow, in just the 2 hours I had given my heart to the Lord and was going around with this small band of Christians sharing gospel tracts and some hot chocolate that we were carrying in thermoses to all these fellows on guard duty in different parts of the base, somehow word had gotten back to this barracks and to this man that I was out now hanging around with these Christians. I'm assuming this because he didn't explain why he said what he said, but it was a clear affront to the fact that I now had faith. And as he was holding me with this supernatural strength with one hand, a knife under my chin with the other hand, and saying, I heard you turn pig, that was an expression at that time that meant that I had, for whatever reason, I had turned over to the law. I was going to squeal on people. I was going to, you know, compromise them in some way. Or, you know, I I'm trying not to, again, not trying to give you all the details of that lifestyle, because it's one that I wish that no one had to live. But as he held me and that knife in my throat, and I'm a two-hour-old baby Christian, all I could think to say to him was, well, okay, then I'll be going to heaven right now. That's good. And it was a natural response. It came right out of my heart, as though the Lord gave me the words, I guess. It just was the only thing I could think to say. And it so startled him, he dropped me to the floor, dropped the knife to the floor, and then he turned and ran towards the window, which was open. This was Germany. They didn't have screens on the window. It was just open window panes, large open window. And this is the third floor, and he was going to dive out the window. And the little roommate who had brought me into the room, a little Mexican guy, I only remember his name as Benny, he ran after the fellow, grabbing him by his back belt hoops and a little bit around his leg and trying to keep him from plunging out the window, at the same time yelling back at me, you know, get out of here, get out of here, oh man, he's going to die, he's going to die, oh man, get out of here. And all I could do, you know, was walk out of the room. But from that very first moment, I realized that I had made the right choice. I had decided Jesus died for me, I should be willing to die for him. Second, that, you know, my life is the Lord's. It's for him to use in any way that he needs to use it, because I gave my heart to him. It belongs to him. It's in his hands. I didn't have any biblical foundation to back up that, even though now, you know, all these years reading God's Word, I know that Father expects that from us, but he also gives us the ability to do it. As a brand-new baby Christian, nothing else to stand on except what just came right out of my heart, because I was in a right relationship with him. I could deal with that and deal with it rightly. And, you know, I know that your program is dealing with time issues. We're certainly concerned about the current events and how that all relates together with Bible prophecy and the inevitable direction that this world is heading in. But I'm telling you that even back then, and this is 41 years ago, what worked then works right now. To just, as a child of God, as a son of the Lord, as someone who knows that their life is no longer in their own hands, it's in his hands, we just simply have to cooperate with him, that I'm not concerned about anything that might lay before me. And I will happily share other stories, especially from our missionary work that we're doing, that will demonstrate the Lord will never fail you if you don't fail him.
That is an awesome story. It's really such a blessing that you had such a great experience early on in your walk, because I know some of us just, you know, try and walk and we're almost afraid of the supernatural even when it comes from Father. So for him to point that out to you so clearly, that was a real blessing, a real blessing.
Well,
so,
the Bible says that to whom much is given, much is required. And I want to insert this right now, because I don't want anyone listening to try to compare the journey they have been on with my journey, not in a way that they will question, all right, maybe I haven't had enough faith, or maybe God just doesn't like me as much as he likes that man, or anything like that. The Lord knows each of us perfectly. Every little thing about us that makes us unique and different and special from the next person, he knows all of that. And all of that is a part of how he works with us, works through us, for us, as he helps us make this journey. So, you know, I'd love to share, and we do certainly have enough time to go into a few more examples of all these great things God has been doing with us and through us. But anyone who will say to the Lord, not my will, but thy will be done, anyone who would say, Lord, I lay myself out as a living sacrifice. I'm going to put myself on your altar. You have me. I give me to you. If we just do that, it's amazing all of the ways the Lord can use us. And I need to say something here. It just came to heart, and I know if I don't speak it now, I might not later. Some of the smallest, practically unnoticeable things that some people do may in the end turn out to be some of the greatest works. And I always love to take people when we get to talking about my experiences, where we've been, what we've done, and all that. I always take them to Acts chapter 8, where you have, Philip, he's gone off to Samaria, and they've got this great citywide revival going, and it's so dynamic that Peter and John, they come down to visit, and people are getting baptized and filled with the Holy Spirit, and wonderful things are going on. And then God picks him up and takes him out to a country roadside where he meets a man in a chariot reading from the book of Isaiah, a man from Ethiopia, far away down in Africa. And he goes from this great revival, notable, an entire chapter of Acts is dedicated to telling the story. It's one of the greatest things. It's the beginning of the church reaching beyond the realm of Judaism and now into the realm of the Gentile world. I mean, all these wonderful things you could say about that revival, and yet the very next thing God does with him is take him out and say, hey, I got a guy I need you to talk to on the roadside. And, you just need to read. I would love to, tell the story in my words. I love all of the accounts in the book of Acts because that is a book to show us God worked with each of his servants in different ways. All the circumstances were special. Sometimes they weren't pleasant. Sometimes they were a great challenge. Sometimes they were physically uncomfortable. Other times, marvelous things happened, unexpected things happened. But the thing that the book of Acts shows us, as well as all of the stories of the Bible, where God took people from different walks of life, some were great as kings, some were hardly noticeable in the crowd, and yet God tailor-fitted their calling, the duty they were to perform was made custom-fitted for that person, for that hour. And so everybody who's listening right now and others who may tune in later on your internet location where they can hear this and maybe rehear it, please know that the Lord has something he needs you to do, and he will enable you to do, and you can do it even if it's not, of such a magnitude that they're going to talk about it on the evening news. But your purpose is important, and until you settle in your heart that God has the right to your life, and I think that's where it began that night for me. Here's this knife at my throat, and I think my phone is ringing from another call, so I'm going to disconnect. I'm sorry about that. Even though I had already gone out and had done, 2 hours of witnessing, the first person that they asked me, these three fellows who were with me, they were, they were all maybe a half a year older than the Lord than I was. We were all young Christians, but so full of enthusiasm. And then finally, as we were speaking to one man who was standing guarding the PX, that's the post exchange, is like the little convenience store on the base, and the man standing there freezing and shivering, the brother in the Lord who had prayed with me first to give my heart to Jesus turns to me and says, you witness to him. And I was going to try to do my best to quote one of the verses they had just told me a couple hours earlier. And I said, God so loved the world that he died. I didn't realize how profound it was theologically, that really as the Son of God, you could say, in a technical way, you know, that God had given his life for us. But, and of course, that was John 3:16, for anyone who's not familiar with the verse, that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever would believe in him would not perish but have everlasting life. And that is the greatest promise that was ever given to anyone. And in this case, it was given to everyone. And that's John chapter 3, verse 16. And that's what I was trying to quote that night. So, you know, I have from the first day of my Christian walk, you know, looking back now and realizing just maybe less than an hour after I quoted that verse and misquoted it, after all that experience of trying to tell people what a wonderful thing Jesus had just done for me and now a knife is at my throat, it was like the whole Christian life in miniature. We start with him, we will end him, we will finish with him. However it finishes, whatever comes on that last day, that last hour, we're still with him. We're still with him. This is one reason why with prophecy being a pretty grave issue today, because we're seeing so much unfolding so rapidly now. Christians are being terrorized all over the Middle East, so my heart goes out to them and all. But I know that his grace is sufficient, and that he, through that grace, through the ministry of his Spirit, through his fellowship with us, his presence in our life, that we can get through anything. And if we will offer him ourselves without condition, unconditionally, offer ourselves to him, then he will do some awesome things. It will be even a surprise to us. In fact, many of the things that have happened through my life, through the efforts that I have given to God, really did more to build my own faith, I think, than it was even a blessing to others.
Well, that's quite a statement. It is. I've noticed that, too, that the more he does, when I'm trying to help someone else, it does definitely enforce my faith. Definitely.
Listen, I have the words of that opening song, and I'd like to read them to you. I had never actually written them down until moments before we went on air, and I was listening to it one more time because I was all excited that it came to heart just today. And as you know, I sent you an email only a couple of hours before broadcast time to say, hey, I found this song I'd really like you to play if you can. And thank you so much for doing that. But This is what the song is saying, and it is someone who is actually saying this to God. You know, we don't speak to the Lord first person. We may give eloquent prayers, but if someone writes this down and mails him a letter, and maybe he'll read it someday. But the song says, you saying this to Jesus Christ, you lived among the least of these, the weary and the weak, and would be a tragedy for me to turn away. All my needs you have supplied. When I was dead, you gave me life. I can not give it away so freely. And I'll follow you into the homes of the broken, follow you into the world, meet the needs of the poor and the needy. God, I will follow you into the world. That's the chorus that is repeated often in that song. And then another verse says, use my hands, use my feet, to make your kingdom come to the corners of the earth. I'm sorry, I can't even read my own writing. I wrote it so fast. To the corners of the earth until your work is done. Faith without works is cross, your blood was shed. So how can we not give it away so freely? You know, those are simple words, but it's a profound idea. That if he did it for me, why can't I do it in return for him? You know, he laid down his life for us. And the Bible encourages us to follow that example. You know, it may be symbolic for most people to take up a cross and follow him. For some people, it's going to be literal. And it is literal today, right now, in some places in the Middle East and the Indian Ocean Basin. I've been hearing stories that people are being crucified. It's sad. My heart goes out to them. But why can't we just, you know, resolve in our heart that if he held nothing back, why am I holding back? If he gave it all, why don't I at least give more than I'm giving? And I, as a pastor, often appealed from the pulpit. I appealed to my people to just simply get closer to him. And once you do, everything that he would like for you to do for him will become the greatest desire of your heart.
Yeah, that song made me cry too when I heard it when I was getting ready to upload it. So, and I know the hearts of my listeners, it's going to make them cry too.
Yeah, and I hope they'll be able to hear it more often. I don't know how to suggest where they'll find it, but I think it's available on the internet. You certainly can locate it and download it, maybe for a small fee or something. Hey, I just came across a note I had left on the table, and I didn't know what directions we could get to, but let me read this little story. It's an illustration I used recently in the islands. We have been establishing a Boy Scouting kind of program for all these young boys around the Caribbean. We started in the Bahamas with it, and it's really taking root. I'll share more about it if time allows. But talking to a room full of young boys and trying to tell them, look, I know that this is all new to you, and you don't think that you have much that you can offer our Father in Heaven, but I just want to tell you a story about a shoreline in the United States after a storm passed by offshore. A little boy was running up and down the beach, and as seaweed and other things had been washed up onto the sand, in fact, the sand was covered with all this stuff from the ocean that these mighty waves the night before were depositing as they broke along the shore. And the little boy was running up and down the beach and picking things up. And this older man standing up on a high part of the sand dune looking down on the little boy was noticing him. And then he came down onto the shoreline himself. And as he got closer, he realized what the little boy was doing is he was running to and fro and picking up starfish. And some he would just toss back down on the ground, and then others he would pick it up and then throw it off into the water. And then he would keep on doing it, and pick up another starfish and throw it out into the water. And the man walked up to him and said, son, what is it you're doing there? And he said, well, you see these starfish, I'm trying to save as many as I can. And the man just sort of chuckled a little and looking, you know, up and down the strand, the beach, covered it with seaweed, covered with starfish. And he says, son, this task is just too big for a little fellow like you. It doesn't much matter what you're trying to do. The little boy bent down, picked up another starfish, held it up and said, well, it matters to this one. And he threw it out into the water. And you know, this is what our Father is trying to ask us to do is the best we can, and that's it, that's all. And yes, the world is turning for the worst and doing it rapidly. It's not God's failure, not at all. In fact, if you look at Bible prophecy and see the end as well as the beginning, you'll realize God said this is where it's going. But there's a reason for all of that, and I could give you my understanding, and we could speculate a little, and we could compare some verses. The point is that it's not going to get better until the Lord himself arrives. But there's so much we can do. And even if it's just picking up a starfish and throwing it back into the sea, you know, we can do that. We have to do that. The story that I love to talk about sometimes when I'm on this subject is about after the atomic bombs were dropped in World War II in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. A doctor was coming out of a tall apartment building, having made a house call with his little doctor kit. And as he had as he stepped out the door of the building, the bomb went off on the other side, so that the building, one of the big steel girders of the building, literally protected him from that blast, that atomic blast. He tells the story. In fact, someone related it to me. I believe he spoke at a Full Gospel Businessmen's function sometime in the 70s and was telling this story, and that's how it got to me. He says that at first he was so stunned by the magnitude of what happened. The foreground in front of him as he looked out away from the building, because the building protected him, but everything around him was gone. Just devastation as far as he could see. And the suddenness of all of that, the magnitude of it, left him stunned and unable to even move until suddenly he felt a hand grabbing at his pant leg. And he looked down, and here was an elderly woman, severely burnt and injured, you know, from the blast, hanging on to his pant leg and tugging at it. And it sort of startled him back to the present, back to the reality. And so he stooped down, being a doctor, he stooped down with his little bag, opened it up, and began to administer, whatever first aid he was capable of with the supplies he had, and doing what he could to provide her comfort. And then he looked and noticed there, not but a few feet away, was another person. So he moved along on his knees over to that person and did what he could for them and for another, until virtually all of the supplies in his little bag were gone. Now, as he shared this at this Full Gospel Businessmen's function, in a room full of men, all of them, I'm sure, were still trying to find God's will for their life, or at least to improve their service to God's kingdom. As he said this to them, he said, look, sometimes we feel overwhelmed by the magnitude of the need. Sometimes the bleakness of what is happening will leave us stunned. But we need to help those closest to us. If you at least reach out to those closest to you, you will have a way of helping them. God will give you that. Our Father knows what you are capable of and knows how to use the resources that are available. And, you know, you need to do it. You need to apply what you can, where you can. And I don't know, we seem to keep returning to this one issue of giving your best while you can give at all. We seem to keep returning to that. You know, the Lord said that the night will come when no man can work. So he says, work while it's yet day. And as far as I'm concerned, on this side of the world, we have tremendous opportunities to do all we can. Now, I know many of your listeners are in other parts of the world, and I certainly hope that we are reaching the globe at this moment. And God bless every one of you. Some of you, I know your opportunities are very minimal. And I pray that you will be able to do what you can for those that you can. But the thing that is important is that we don't just give up. Surrender is not an option. We're in this thing until he parts the sky and receives us unto himself.
Yes, we've been talking a lot lately about how Father calls us all to do something. He has a calling for every part of the body, and he is able to provide provision for what he calls you to do, as well as the wherewithal to do it. So that's a very good point.
I have a little thing I found as I was shuffling everything around, trying to make enough room to enjoy this conversation and not be overwhelmed with too many things on a very small boat. And I found this paper. I want to read it to you. I think it's cute, and I'd like to make a comment about it. I have had this. It's an old typed paper. Y'all, a classic typewriter from a long time ago. I don't know when I first got it or typed it, but I've had it a long time. But it says the qualifications of a pastor. Now, I know there's very few pastors listening, but the rest of you might find a little humor in this, and then I'd like to make a point at the end. But the qualifications of a pastor. Now, we always think of the guy who's supposed to do all the work is the guy who gets that title, but we all have work to do. Anyway, qualifications of a pastor. The strength of an ox. The tenacity of a bulldog. The daring of a lion. The patience of a donkey. The industry of a beaver. The versatility of a chameleon. The vision of an eagle. The meekness of a lamb. The hide of a rhinoceros. The disposition of an angel. The resignation of a leper. The loyalty of an apostle. The heroism of a martyr. The discernment of a prophet. The tenderness of a shepherd. The fervency of an evangelist. The devotion of a mother. And the willingness to live on the income of a canary. I don't know. I'm going to tell you that this paper, I've had it since sometime in the 70s. I recognize the type. I know which typewriter I did it on. And I don't remember where I got it from. I don't know how it even happened to be on this boat. Because we sort of scrutinize what we bring aboard because of the limit of space. And somehow, as I was setting up my little computer so it would be available if I needed to reference anything, it fell out from somewhere. So I thought this is adorable. But really, in some ways, maybe this is how we all need to be. I was thinking to myself as I looked at it, and this was, again, just before you know, we got prepared to get on air with you, so I think it's timely. Maybe we all have the ability to do these things, if not everyone, at least most of them. the willingness to live on the income of a canary, that might be very appropriate in the times ahead as things get a lot leaner. But think about each of these. I wish I had found it earlier. I think I would have gone to the Bible and see if I could find a scripture to back up every one of these. Certainly there are passages that address some of these characteristics, but, you know, not just a pastor, every one of them. If the Lord asks us to do something, if he expects something from us, tells us, he will enable us to do it. This is something that I think a lot of people who are weak in their faith, who have been struggling, even some who have been reluctant to give it a start, to try it out. We may have people listening right now who haven't really given in yet. They just keep testing the waters. They keep listening to different people and trying to get an idea if this is for them or not. And I regret that because time is the times are getting very, very tough. And to get started late is to get started with a great disadvantage because you need some time to get to know the Lord. You need some time to get to understand his ways, to understand that he is strong when you need strength, that he is caring when you need care, that he is wise when you need wisdom. You need time to do that. You need to understand his ways. I have some friends that are into survival skills, and I really admire them. I have some of my own, and I certainly am very practical. Of course, I mentioned that I'm working with a scouting-type program that I'm developing. I'm doing the writing of all the literature, so I'm relearning things that I knew a long time ago as a Boy Scout myself. I think it's great that we have, you know, some very practical, down-to-earth skills, but we need spiritual skills, too. We need to know how to identify when he's given us a change of direction, when God is trying to caution us, when our Father is trying to say, better stop right here. Things have changed up ahead. We've got to go a different path. You know, we need to be so familiar with his voice, so familiar with the touch of his hand, that we are comforted by it. And it needs to be a daily comfort for many people. If you are out there and you are listening to people talk about their faith and talk about the things they've done, and you might even admire those things,
but you haven't yet opened the door, despite the fact there's a knock. Oh, I don't know. I'm knocking on a table. I don't know if it's coming through the phone. I do it out of habit. Every time I talk about Revelation 3 and 20, where he says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man will open that door, I will come in and I will live with them and they will live with me. You know, he's knocking on the door. And if you feel that knock, even right at this moment, you need to say a prayer and say, I'm so sorry I've left you outside all this time. I'm so sorry that I haven't acknowledged your overtures of kindness and love. That means he's been trying to show you how much he cares for you. He's done it through so many different things in your life. There may have been miracles, really, miracles that nobody could explain that God has done for you. He did some for me before I became a Christian. And he's been doing many, many more since then. You know, you need to just say, Lord, I hear you knocking on the door. Here, I'm putting the phone closer to the table. I hope you can hear it. That's what he's doing. It's in your heart. But the knock is real. And all he's saying is, please, just open the door. If you want, I'll just stand in the doorway for a moment so you can realize just how much I love you, how much I have cared for you. If you want, I'll stand in the doorway for a moment, and I will tell you of something that I did for you so you'll realize that, yes, I've been trying to help, but we can't keep this relationship going like this because with a door between us, never really know me. You'll never really know me. You need to know me. You need to be able to follow me. And you know, we're in a time that people can't take chances. You can't put off for tomorrow what should have already been done yesterday. You can't take that chance. You can't take that chance. Over the years, I've had a few experiences where I shared Jesus with all my heart to someone, and they decided they would wait, and then some terrible tragedy happened to them. I regret that. I regret that. I have known people who went back into a deeper pit of sin that maybe it has something to do with, you know, refusing the Lord's offer, so everything just gets worse, but knowing what they could have had, and it's something that, you know, I hope is not inappropriate for me to say, but God only owes you one invitation. You know, he should only come to the door once and knock. He really should, although it seems that he does it for some people often, but he only owes you that one. When Jesus sent his disciples to go out on their road campaign, they were going to go out and do some door-to-door knocking as he commissioned them and to give them some early experience before he would finally make his departure and they would be on their own. As he sent them out, he told them, you know, that if you come to the door and you greet them in Jehovah's name and you offer peace to that house, if they don't accept you, just go on to the next house. Go to the next house. Jesus said something that's really very profound. He says, you will not go to every door before I return. And I'm paraphrasing very loosely because I know we have people without Bibles in front of them, and if you do, I can show you, you know, where the passages are. But I'm telling you that if you have been putting God off, you're taking a great, great risk. If you are a Christian, you believe in the Lord, you have offered him your life, but yet you have not responded to his calling. We're all given a calling. We all have a and if you haven't done it and you keep putting it off, the Lord may have to offer that job to someone else because there are things that need to get done. Please respond, and you will know that he is talking to you. I'm going to hand the mic back to you for a moment there. I don't want to do all the talking. I enjoy listening to you as well, Dorothy.
I'm enjoying this. I am remembering back to when he started calling me to do radio, and I'm going, are you serious? With my voice? He has given me some excellent hosts, and I'm so glad I said yes, but I remember the first time he started prodding me to do this, and no, you gotta be kidding me. But yes, well, he does call us to do something. And I have met some wonderful people, let me tell you. Do you need to take a break? I can play a song for a moment.
Well, would you do that for a moment? I'm just going to get a cup of water. In fact, my wife just stepped down to do that for me. And
I can play that song we were going to do if I can find it. Let's see. Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
4 minutes and 44 seconds, this song is. That should give us enough time to put out the dog and put in the cat.
Well, I only have a cat, but let me say to those who are listening right now, please don't leave us.
Please come back. I want to
talk about a few more of the experiences we had in our sailing. One of them that I know everybody will enjoy was the time we rescued 17 Cubans that we found hopelessly lost at sea. And that story will be awesome to hear, but it also has some very important messages in it as well. So please come back, okay?
Okay, let's play this song. This one really touches my heart. This is the song that was playing when I got baptized as a child.
A true story of a small village in India. And in this village, there was this family that came to a saving faith in Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord. This agitated the village so much, and everybody became so upset that an angry mob gathered and shoved them into the public square. The village chief confronted them, and he said to the man, "If you and your family will not recant your faith, you all will surely die." The man didn't know what to say or what to do, and so the only thing that came to mind for him were the words of a song that he himself had composed when he had first surrendered his life to God. And so he began to sing, "I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. No turning back." And with that, horrifically, his children were killed.
I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. No turning back.
He was given another chance, this time with his wife's life on the line. And yet he continued to sing, "Though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back, no turning back.
Though none go with me, still I will follow. Though none go with me, still I will follow. Though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back, no turning back."
After her tragic death, he was given one final opportunity, this time to save himself. And yet he continued to sing.
Cross before me, the world behind. The cross before me, the world behind me. The cross before me,
even though that man and his family died on that day, something remarkable happened. A seed was planted in the heart of that village chief, a seed that began to grow over time, and eventually he called the community together in that very same neighborhood, in that very same square, and he renounced his former faith and declared his allegiance to Jesus Christ. And a celebration broke out in that moment, and the gospel began to flourish and to grow in that community, not just in that village, but across the whole region, because they had seen real faith, and they knew the true character of God because of a family that believed and sacrificed, even under the penalty of death.
No turning back. No turning back.
I just love that version of that hymn. I had no idea what that man gave to write that song.
That tree was awesome. Awesome, yes. You know, when we hear stories of other people and what they have done, and we wonder, what kind of character is that? What kind of special gift must they have had? How can anybody do what some people do that just seems so phenomenal? But I have found in my own life experiences that when I'm in a situation that I'm going to do an exceptional thing, God gives me an exceptional blessing. Usually beforehand, sometimes as it is occurring, it is something that He assured us that we would not be standing alone, no matter how fierce the storm, that He would be right there with us. I told you before we went to break, and I certainly hope everybody's back with us, and bless all of you for hearing my stories. I sometimes feel that it will sound like I'm being boastful or something, and I'm not. I'm really not. I am humbled by the things that have happened and the ways God has used me. And that's the way it should be. It should be that, because without Christ, we can do nothing. And He said that Himself. Without me, we can do nothing, He said. I have had moments where I was discouraged and felt overpowered, and I need to learn when things are going wrong, they're very likely about to go right. And I don't know why it has to go in that order, but sometimes it'll be that way. We sailed down to Guatemala one year. We had heard that they had a lot of trouble in that area with natural disasters, and it was on my heart to go. We carried supplies. We took a lot of clothing to deliver to orphanages along the river, the Guatemala River, the Rio Dulce River, in Guatemala. And it was a good journey, although it was rather short, because we were going to try to come back in time to be with family at Christmas. We don't get that opportunity very often, and this time it looked like we could squeeze in a couple of months to sail to Central America, bring some supplies, investigate how we could help out in the future, and then come back. But as we were leaving Guatemala, we're sailing in in the Caribbean Sea, which covers everything underneath Cuba and underneath Dominican Republic and Haiti and all of that. It's a large body of water. As we were sailing out of Guatemala, the winds suddenly died out. Came completely still, glassy seas, still air. Something that never happens in that area, because the trade winds blow very consistently from east to west, across from all the way from Africa, across the Atlantic Ocean, through the islands of the Caribbean, across the Caribbean Sea, and towards the coastal area of Nicaragua, Honduras, and Guatemala, where we were, Belize, Mexico. this wind is so steady and consistent that people can count on it to travel. And now we were in a dead calm with a glassy sea, no waves. For 2 days, it was so unusually calm that I would sit on the bow of my boat with a long paddle and actually paddle a little bit just to keep the boat turned facing north, the direction we wanted to go in, just in case the winds came back, so we at least were facing the right direction. And it was a very disturbing, very discouraging time because, first of all, I was anxious to get home for Christmas, and second, this isn't supposed to happen. You know, it's not supposed to happen like that. Now, by the third day and into that evening, the winds began to climb, and they climbed very steadily so that by that night, the winds were up to at least their usual strength and in some ways even stronger. The waves began to mount up because all this sudden wind was coming. We did find out. We found out many months later, talking about this experience, we found out that like a tropical wave, it's a ridge of air was running down over Jamaica and dividing the Caribbean Sea in half. And because of that atmospheric condition and all of its associated clouds, it was literally blocking the trade winds, which seems impossible, but it was doing it. So I know that there was an event, a weather event that was causing this. But here we were now, finally on this third day, into that evening, winds now picking up very strong, waves climbing very steep, and our boat took off like a little rocket ship, literally. We have a trimaran sailboat. For those that might know something about sailboats, most sailboats have one single hull. Well, ours has three hulls. A catamaran has two. We have three. And because of that, we ride high on the water, and as the wind picked up, we were going very fast, literally leaping from wave top to wave top in some cases. Well into the night, and we were, both my wife and I were keeping watch because of those conditions, but around 4 to 4:30 or so, sometime like then, we were getting a little weary and wanting a little refreshment, so we went down below, my wife to get herself maybe some coffee. I was going to get some hot chocolate. It was winter, even though it wasn't real cold. With all that wind and everything, we just needed a break. And as I went down the steps into the interior of the boat, I suddenly heard the sound of people's voices, like crying out, yelling, making sound. And I darted back up to the deck. And as I did, I grabbing a large flashlight that was close to me, shining across the water, I could actually see the faces of some people, some hands waving. And all I could think was, oh my, in the middle of this night, we have come upon some fishermen out at sea, and perhaps there was more than one boat because the sounds, the voices seem all around us, and I was concerned that we might even be running across their fishing nets or whatever. So I yelled back out best I could, you know, to, I'm so sorry, I hope we haven't hurt you. And we were moving so quickly, they were suddenly out of our sight. I started thinking, but wait a minute, we are in the middle of the ocean. The distance between the western edge of Cuba and the Mexican coast is 150 miles, and we were just a little west of center. Nobody would be out fishing in the middle of the ocean. They just don't do that. They don't venture that far from land. Now, we're still going at a pretty high rate of speed because the wind is still blowing strong, and I said to my wife, you know, that might have been somebody in trouble. Maybe we need to see if we can make a call for help. We tried to call Coast Guard, who do monitor the radio, but we were clearly out of range. We tried to call the Mexican coastline, and again, nobody responded. But finally, one person came back on the radio that turned out to be the radio operator of a freighter that was passing in the night somewhere over the horizon. And I told him what was going on, and he said he was going to get the captain, but he never called us back. I think they didn't want to be bothered. Now we've traveled a considerable distance in a very few minutes of time, and I said to my wife, we're going to have to go back and to see what that is. Now, there's always a fear of piracy out in those open waters, and there's always a risk to do what we were going to do. But in our hearts, we knew that we had to respond to what might have been a cry for help. So we took the sails down, turned the boat around, and now going back somewhat against the wind with the motor turning, my wife steering the boat, and me up on the deck, up on the bow, with this bright spotlight in my hand, shining out across the water, trying to see where we're going. We began on a reciprocal course, meaning the opposite direction that we were sailing. We went back as best we could in that direction. And then all of a sudden, out across the waves, now this is in a very dark night, no moonlight, just the starlight, out in the distance, a tiny, faint little light appeared, bouncing on the waves. Of course, with the swells, these large seas passing by, the light would appear for a moment and then be gone, and then suddenly appear again and seem to be in a slightly different spot. But it gave me a sense of what direction that light was in, and that we started going that way, me shining my spotlight towards it. And eventually, after quite a few minutes, and in all that excitement, I have no idea how much time was passing, but I began to see faces again with my spotlight, and it was people in trouble, in distress. And as we got closer and closer, suddenly with these waves tossing us back and forth and tossing them back and forth, we actually collided with a little tiny makeshift boat and full of people. And as soon as we made that contact, as our bow struck their little vessel, and I'm using those words because it wasn't really a boat at all, and I'll describe that in a moment. All these people began to climb out and onto the bow, pushing each other up and onto the deck, and I'm grabbing them by hands and shirt sleeves and trying to drag them on. And, of course, we're tossing side to side with these big waves, some of them crashing over them as they were climbing out. And I kept pulling them out, and then as all these men flooded my deck, I ran forward and looked down into the boat as the last couple of men were trying to climb out. And here was this precious woman, and she was holding a little baby. It's a one-year-old baby. She was holding it up, reaching it out towards me, and I've got my arm wrapped around our head sail. That's the head sail. Trying to balance myself on the very point of the boat, the bow of the boat, leaning over with my arm, and I grabbed the little baby by a wad of his shirt, and I lifted him up, and I passed him over to some of the people, these Cuban people who came up behind me to help. And then I reached down, and I grabbed her arm, and I held on real tight as the boats were shaking back and forth, waves crashing again up and over the top of everyone, and I lifted her up and onto the deck. It was so dramatic. It was one of those moments where you almost have supernatural strength as God enables you to do what you never thought you could do. And then two of the men came back to give me a hand because what they had is a boat which looked like a part of a huge tank, a big steel tank. Like a water tank or something that had been cut in half, and they had a makeshift engine in, although there was no apparent way to steer the thing. They just had this motor, as I showed my light on it, looked like a two-cylinder motor from a large lawnmower or something like that. But anyway, the boat was flooding with water and clothing, articles of clothing floating about. Nothing else, no food. They had been without food. I would learn later they had been without food for a couple of days. They thought they could make the journey overnight in a day, and now they had been at sea for 4 days. As my light was piercing down into this little boat, a man on each end of their boat was jumping up and down on it, trying to dislodge it from the outer bows of my outer two hulls, because it literally had cut into my boat and was stuck to me. They were trying to jump on it and break it loose, and I'm shining my light in to see what was left inside the boat, and suddenly I saw a human leg in the water. And I told the men, get this person. Nobody stays behind. I want everybody on the boat. I'm gesturing, but they understood what I meant. And so they leaped back into the water as this container was sinking, and they lifted up a little girl that we learned was about 11 or 12 years old. And as they lifted her up towards me, I grabbed her by one of her wrists. And at that moment that I made contact with her wrist, I could feel a faint pulse, even though she was unconscious, her body was bluish and cold. I could feel a faint pulse, and I pulled her up onto the deck, and then they followed her up onto my boat as their little vessel began to sink away from us, and I called for my wife. We wrapped her up in this green canvas cloth that we had. It was one of our sail covers, and carried her to the back. Do you know that after a couple of hours, as her body began to warm, as she began to respond, my wife giving her electrolyte fluids to counteract the effects of the dehydration, which had caused her to go into shock and become unconscious. They thought she was dead. They thought she had expired. This young girl was revived and came back to life like that. I mean, it was perhaps for me one of the highlights of my life. And to realize that none of these things could have happened if the wind had not abated, if we had not slowed to a drift, if we had gone on in our usual speed, we would have missed those people by at least a day or two. But now, here my boat was covered with all these folks. We gave them what was left of our water supplies. We gave them some crackers, a few substances that we had that were left. Our trip was nearly over, so our supplies were almost gone. But we were able to provide them safety, provide them an opportunity to escape what would have been an inevitable death. And I thank God for that. And here they were, all these men strewn across the decks of the boat. I learned from trying to translate, you know, interpret what little Spanish I knew, and we understood that they were trying to get to Mexico. So I decided we would turn the boat about, make the 8, 9, or 10-hour journey to Mexico and take them to where they needed to be. As I began in that new direction, and the dawn was starting to break on the horizon, a couple of the young men, most of them were young men. There was an older man, kind of the senior member of their little crew, and then these several ladies, three women, including the mother with the baby and this little precious little girl. So quite a number, 17 in all. But two of the young men begged for the opportunity to come back into the pilot house, the area that I was steering the boat from. I meant for all the men to stay out. We just had the women in the back, men on the deck spread out everywhere. But the two wanted so much to come, and I just felt, well, I should give them that chance. And as they stepped in, they began to tell me their story. These were the only two Christian believers in that group of 17, only two who knew the Lord. And through hand signs and a collection of words and illustrations, we were able to convey, they were able to convey their story to me, that they had given their heart to Jesus about 2 months earlier. They were brand new Christians. And during the night, as it was becoming apparent, they might never make it safely to land because they had been at sea so long. Food was now gone. Water was gone. The baby was crying in anguish because the mother could not even provide milk. And this other little girl had already collapsed and was unconscious, and it seemed they were doomed. These two Christian boys began to pray in the middle of the night, and this is what they prayed. And I understand this, again, from, you know, my broken Spanish and their many illustrations, but they just prayed, you know, Father, at least save this little baby. At least just save this little baby because of baby Jesus on Christmas. Save this little baby. And as they prayed that prayer, both of these fellows confirmed this. As they prayed that prayer, a giant angel flew right over their boat. They saw its big white wings. They saw this angel flying over them, and they both knew they were going to be all right. But the angel kept on going off into the dark, and so they cried out to the angel, and they kept crying, please come back and save the baby. Come back and save us all. Suddenly, a star appeared on the horizon. A bright star, just like the Christmas star they had been told about in the Christmas story. And so they began to rejoice because they knew that the Lord had heard their prayer and they were going to be rescued. And the star kept getting bigger and bigger and closer and closer. Well, at that point, I realized what they were describing was that searchlight that I was shining off the bow. And so I reached down. It was still sitting beside me on the deck, and I picked it up, and I said, oh, you mean this star? And I shone the light. But, you know, it doesn't matter what it was. Their faith was at work. And I realized that the angel wings were our sails on our boat. You know, the three big sails we had, it was our boat flying past them, but it was the sails that they could see. And they knew that their prayers were being answered, and they were exactly right. It wasn't an angel, and it wasn't a star, but it was an answer to their prayers, exactly the way God meant for it to be. And that was so wonderful. I was so moved by it. And now, as the morning light was flooding the decks, we could begin to see a little hint of the Mexican coastline in the distance, I remembered that I still had a few more Spanish witnessing tracts, you know, little books telling about the gospel in Spanish with little illustrations. And so I got those and began to pass them around. I had just three. I gave to two of the women and to the elderly man. All three began to read. One of them, the mother of the child, read through several times. She'd get to the end, she'd go back to the beginning. I kept watching her, going through the pages. Got to the end, went back to the beginning again. And then finally, she looked up at me and realized I was watching her. And she smiled, and she pointed to her heart and nodded her head. And I knew what she meant. She had given her heart to Jesus. And she did. The other young lady who was on the opposite side of me, out on the edge of the boat, laying down on a little cot we had made for her, she made a sound to get my attention. I turned my head, and she nodded with a big smile on her face. She had given her heart to Jesus, too. And the man, the older man, who was just still standing close by, he looked at me and just nodded his head as well, and I knew that the Lord, and as simple as that sounds, because they had gone through this great thing, and they knew it was a miracle that had saved them, and they knew that God was already watching after them, already taking care of them, even before they made the choice to be a member of his family, to ask him into their heart, to forgive their sins, and give them a new life. Before they did any of that, he was already taking care of them. They knew they could count on him because he was already watching after them and brought us along miraculously. If the winds had not been calm for those 2 days, if we had just stayed another day or two and did a little more in Guatemala, or if we had left a week earlier because we wanted to make sure we would be home for Christmas, there were so many variables. That's how big God is. That's how perfect he accomplishes his purpose. And people need to understand that. Now, it was still up to them, after reading about this good news, this gospel, and understanding what God's terms are, it was still up to them. After the miracles, after his special care, it was still up to them to say, I want you in my heart. I want to do this your way. Some of you who are listening out there in different parts of this world, You may have had all kinds of answers to prayers, but it still is not affirming that you have met the conditions that he expects, that he requires. And it is in your interest to say to him, Lord, please, I want to do it your way. I want to know that I'm with you as much as you are with me. And so, you know, I know that I've already offered a little prayer earlier. I want to offer another prayer right now in case someone, in hearing this kind of a story and realizing, you know, I might have listened to some other channel or might not have listened at all tonight and I might have missed this, but I'm here and I'm hearing it. And I know I will be responsible for having heard it, and I want to do this thing right. You know, just tell the Lord, I'm sorry for what I've done. I'm sorry for the mistakes I've made. I'm sorry for the things I did intentionally wrong. And I just want you to please give me another chance. Just wash that away. Fill my heart up with your goodness. Let me have life in Christ. Let me, Lord, be a member of your family. Please, Father in heaven, I know that you have compassion because look what you've done for me. I'm crying out, help me now. And if you are doing that, if you are saying those words, or if you're at least feeling it in your heart, please, please acknowledge him. Just say thank you. Thank you. I'm going to count on it. I'm going to count on it. God loves you that much. He loves you that much. Anyway, that's that story. I don't know where we are on our time. I see my clock. Do you want to
half an hour?
Okay, good, good. I've got plenty of stories to tell, but I was wondering, I think you said to me one time that once in a while people will call in or write in or send a question or something, and I don't know, have you had anyone that wanted to be a part of this conversation tonight?
Not so far. Let's give them a couple of minutes since we just told them it's okay to have a question.
Sure,
and,
sure.
If you have a question, post it. They're enjoying that story. They enjoyed that story. I couldn't help but think how desperate their living situation must have been in Cuba to take that big a chance. I mean, that's a big risk to take.
It is. You know, there was a time when a lot of people were dying in Cuba because of the persecution of the government. Now the economy is a little more stable. Now government has sort of adjusted the standard of life a little bit, a far cry from anything that we enjoy in America or anywhere else in the first world. Countries, you know, we call them first world or third world, but you know there's something about freedom that is a passion of the heart. And I remember the second time that we rescued three Cubans that had been lost at sea for 10 days in a little boat. Although they still had some supplies and all, they were also caught in the same current that would have carried them away from Mexico and up into the western half of the Gulf of Mexico, somewhere off the coast of Texas or somewhere like that. But the currents in the center of the Gulf of Mexico throughout most of it sort of eddy, meaning they spiral inward and do circular patterns. And people without the means of propulsion will get caught in those currents and never make it to land anywhere, and they will expire. But these three people, there were two men and a lady, were still in reasonable health when we found them. They still had food supplies and all of that, and they were very talkative. We had a young couple, I was eating a part of a cookie. I shouldn't admit that on the radio, but once in a while, a little sugar kick will keep me moving faster. One of the men was very talkative, and we had a young couple traveling with us on that trip, and this was on our way down towards the Central America at the beginning of our journey. And so we had this couple, and they were trained in Spanish, and they were able to communicate with these three people, especially this one young man who
who kept talking about why he was doing what he was doing. And in the course of the conversation, we realized how desperate people were to just be free. That was it. Even if they had shelter, if they had a minimal amount of food and all, it was knowing that they were not free was what drove these people out to that sea and willing to risk their lives, literally risk their lives. And I've learned since those experiences of rescuing these Cuban refugees, talking with officials in the Coast Guard and other branches of the government, I have learned that our best estimate is at least one-third or perhaps more of those who try to escape Cuba in these rafts and makeshift boats never make it anywhere, are lost and never heard of again, which is very, very sad. And it helped me to, in talking with them, it helped me to have a different kind of appreciation of what opportunities I have, having been born in the country I was born in, and how much I had to be thankful for. The Apostle Paul, in writing to Timothy, his son in the Lord, who he installed as pastor of the church in Ephesus, one of the most significant churches in the Gentile world, and Paul wrote two letters to him, very personal letters. But in 1 Timothy chapter 6, he's talking about the attitudes of some of the people that were already causing conflict in the church and beginning to teach their own ideas and distorting the gospel and distorting the simplicity of the Christian experience and everything. And, we have plenty of false teachers in the world that we're contending with today, and they had their share then. But he talked about people that were even including prosperity as a part of their distorted message, trying to tell the people that if they had more faith, they would have more stuff and stuff like that. And he makes a statement. He says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world. It is certain we can carry nothing out. Having food and raiment, let us therewith be content." Now, this is a very simple statement he's making, but it can have a profound effect on a person's life. We gave up a nice little home. We gave up, I gave up the church I was pastoring in North Carolina. My children had to give up, not too many, but enough toys and things that they certainly, they were able to bring a few things on the boat with them, but then we lost so much when we were shipwrecked, and then we had to continue to live a much simpler lifestyle to continue to be sailing missionaries. Now the children are grown up and they have their own lives, but they still cherish what they experienced. I think it still had a meaningful impact in who they are today and the successfulness that they are enjoying, because they came to appreciate what really does matter over all the other frivolous things that people exploit themselves for. In this verse here where it says that, we brought nothing in, we're not taking anything out, if we got food and clothing, we ought to be satisfied, we ought to be content. He goes on to talk about people who get wrapped up in an ambition for something they shouldn't. And in verse 9 he says, "They that will be rich," or those whose will, those whose lust or our goal in life is to be rich, "will fall into a temptation and a snare and many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in perdition and destruction." He says the love of money is the root of all evil. And that, of course, we've heard that throughout life. If you've been around church long enough, you've heard someone say that before. But there is something that we are about to experience that I think will be a benefit to many. We're about to have our world turn upside down. We're about to see a lot of what we have taken for granted suddenly not there anymore. I think we're going to be tightening our belt. I think times will get harder. But you know what? We may end up in a situation similar to these fellas who these Cubans that I'm talking about, who out there on that water and in that daring attempt to find freedom, knowing that no matter what they had or didn't have, what really mattered the most is they needed to be free. I laugh sometimes when I remember way back before I became a Christian, I listened to all these secular songs, and one of them, though, that really stuck with me in an odd way that I couldn't shake, because somehow I felt like, you know, this is my life story. Long before I knew that I was going to be a missionary, long before I knew I'd learn how to live a simpler life and get a lot more done with it. But it was a song by someone, Janis Joplin. I don't know how many people we have listening on the radio that are in our age group, but she was a secular performer. I don't endorse her life. She literally killed herself with drug abuse. But she sang a song in which one of the lines says, "Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose." Do you remember that? I'm going to find out.
Yes, I remember that.
I don't like to look back that far, and that certainly is a lifetime and a lifestyle that I don't want to associate with again. But, you know, there was something unique about those words that maybe some of our Christian listeners need to consider. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. I think the name of the song was Me and Bobby McGee, I believe is the name of the song. But, We have people listening right now who are heavily laden with concern, worries, and fears, fears of their life, fears of their possessions, fears of the relationships they have, fears what's going to happen if it's not here tomorrow, what's going to happen if it's all taken away, what's going to happen. If our hearts are centered in Christ, and if we have really taken to the core of our being, what matters the most, all these other things could be gone, and we'll never miss them. We'll never miss them. When Jesus took his disciples aside during that last week, before it was all going to come to a close for him in this chapter on earth, and he would give his life in exchange for ours and then ascend to heaven and be ready to intercede on our behalf, he took the disciples aside and he gave them a preview of what was coming. And we call this the Olivet Discourse. You know, this was his end time message. Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. You can read his words. You can get the substance of what he said, but the essence of what he said, the real heart, was you need to decide now that you will do whatever it takes to finish your course, that you're willing to do without, you're willing to lay down your life if that is required, you're willing to do it. You've got to make that decision. You've got to settle it in your heart. He wasn't trying to give them a picture so they could hold that picture up looking at the landscape and say, "Oh yeah, now I see, there it comes. I know what day it is. I know what hour it is." I believe that his discourse, although all of the clues that are given, and there are some very important signs to be that you need to know and be aware of and watching for, because we're going to need encouragement. We're going to need it. But what he was really saying to them is, look, it will get tougher before it's over. But you need to know that those days will be cut short. I'm coming quickly. That's the last thing that we are told in the whole Bible, that he is coming quickly. And his reward is going to be with him. We need to know what the signs of the times are. But we need to know them not so that we can figure out what's going to happen next. We need to know them so that we can resolve it in our hearts. We can settle the matter now. Do it now. Settle in our heart. We're in this thing to the end. We are committed to Christ, turning back. You know, there's a song that we were singing when I was a brand new Christian called I Have Decided to Follow Jesus, you know. I have decided to follow Jesus. And then we say that over and over. One of the first songs I learned to play on a guitar, and boy, we would walk up and down the streets in Germany, brand new baby Christians, singing it to all the Germans who just kind of looked at us funny. But any American that we meet along the way, we would say, hey, we've decided to follow Jesus. Now, some of the other verses say, though none go with me, still I will follow. The cross before me, the world behind me, that's another verse, you know. The cross before me, the world behind me. And the last part of each verse says, no turning back. No turning back. You remember that song?
Yep.
That's the one
we played when I was being baptized. And I remember Father touched my heart at that point in time. Of course, I didn't stay on the straight and narrow, you know. But I came back. And that song just resonates with me so much. I just cry every time I hear it.
Yeah. Well, you know, what makes it work, how you are able to follow him, is that you made the decision. I have decided. My mind is made up.
Mm-hmm.
My mind is made up. I think that a lot of people who are struggling tonight, and I'm saying this to you out there, some of you, you have responded to this song. Maybe it just sort of resonated in some way in your heart, and you realize, look, I thought I was committed, but I didn't stick with it. Well, the Lord knows that. You know, Peter was, he was a pretty special guy. You know, Jesus took him on early. The Bible tells us, if you read all three of the Gospels, actually you got to read John as well to get all the picture in there, but you find out that Andrew saw Jesus being baptized and heard what John the Baptist said about him, and it was quite a sight. It convinced him. He ran and got his brother Peter, and they followed Jesus for a while, and so did James and John. They were two brothers who were fishing buddies and all that, and they saw some miracles. You know, they saw the water turned into wine. They saw a demon cast out. They saw a dead person raised up. I mean, some really neat things happened for a couple of chapters in the gospel. But by the time you get to Luke chapter 5, and when the gospels, all four, James, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, are laid together, and they're all put in their right chronological order, you can see all these events as they occur. By the time we get to Luke chapter 5, Peter and his brother and the other two guys are out there by the Sea of Galilee. They have been fishing all night. Now they're trying to lay their nets out so they don't rot during the daytime. They got to dry out. And while they're doing this, here comes Jesus with a crowd of people. This is in Luke chapter 5. And they're coming along the shore. He's got this huge crowd pressing against. Everybody wants to hear him. But, you know, Jesus comes up to the fisherman and he says to Peter, shove your boat out into the water. What he wants to do is he wants to get the boat off the shore so everybody will stop pressing in too tight, and then he can stand on the boat crying out to the people, and sound carries very well on the water, by the way, and then he can teach them. And so he does that. Peter just does it. But now remember, Peter had followed Jesus for a while. Some people estimate it could have been several months or so. Saw some miracles, yet here he is. He went back to fishing. Well, he had a family. He had a boat. And, you know, I'm not going to fault him for it, but some reason he's there. But Jesus is teaching the people, and afterwards he turns to Peter, and he says, did you catch anything last night? And Peter says, no, we fished all night. Didn't catch anything. He said, well, put your nets over on the other side. Now, a lot of people don't know that the fishing boats at that time, to properly work these nets and bring these large, heavy things aboard, they had mounted on the gunwale, which is like the railing along the sides of the boat, along one side of the boat they had these little pegs mounted into it, built into it, or screwed in or placed in. And what they would do is they would hook the one edge of the net onto that, as they're trying to bring it on, and then they would reach back into the water, grab another section of the net, and then bring it up out of the water, hook it on those pegs, and then reach back in, grab another. And what you end up with, by hooking each of these parts of the net, you're literally creating a large bag, and which has all the fish, or you hope has fish in it, and you get it up onto these pegs. And then you can flip the rest of the net on into the boat, and the fish will dump into the boat, and all that's what those pegs are for. But if he throws the net on the other side, it's going to be harder to get that net on. But that's what he does, and as soon as the net goes down, it fills up with fish, and they begin to pull it, and he calls for the other boat to come out, and the James and John, the other brothers, they come out there to help Peter and Andrew, trying to get this huge net of fish. And doing it the hard way, but they're bringing it on. The net is full. And as they do that, as they're doing that, Peter realizes what it all means. And he falls at the feet of Jesus. I don't know how Jesus was standing. The boat was rather small, but Jesus was standing there. And he falls at the feet of Jesus, and he cries out. And he says, "Depart from me, Lord. I'm a wicked man." And Jesus says, "Don't be afraid. You follow me, and I'll make you a fisher of men." Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? And that's the compassion that he had for him. But you know what? After that, we got another couple of years of miracles of all kinds, wonders beyond imagination. You know, if I had been there, I think I just would have been stunned in awe. Day after day, things were going on. It was all wonderful and all great. And yet, when the soldiers grabbed Jesus in the garden that night, and carried him off to the courts in front of the priests and the people who were full of venom, and then took him onto a cross to be crucified. And here's Peter. He tried to follow. People recognized his clothing, knew he was from Galilee, and said, "Hey, you're one of that preacher's followers, aren't you?" And he denied Jesus three times, just as Jesus told him that very night at the dinner table, told him he would deny him. And now three times he says, "No, I don't know him." Jesus also told him that he would deny him three times, and a rooster would crow. And sure enough, when that rooster crowed, he ran away crying, brokenhearted, ashamed. When Jesus resurrected, he actually visited with the disciples and showed himself. And we have in the Gospels, we have accounts of visitations that he was doing. But there was one time that was very special that fits this story. And I hope it really speaks to the hearts of those listening. This was a time where Peter, I don't think, really had forgiven himself yet. And so he says to the disciples, "I go fishing." And so some of the disciples went with him, literally. I mean, this was after the Lord resurrected and had been appearing at different times and all. They were still gathering together, still concerned what's going to happen, because they knew the crowds were still around Jerusalem. Passover was over, but many of the people had not gone home. And, you know, everything was going on. It was a frightful time in some ways. And yet they saw the Lord alive, just like he said he would be. But now Peter is going to go fishing. Maybe it was for a good purpose. Maybe they were running out of food, you know. Let's go get some food. But they're out on this boat, and here a man on the shore calls out, "Have you caught anything?" Peter might have been a little irritated. I don't know. He cries back, "No, we haven't." "Well, cast your net on the other side." And you know, without even thinking, I suppose, they put the net on the opposite side of the boat. It filled up with fish again. This is awesome. I'm trying to flip pages here to remember the exact place in Luke, but this is at the end of the gospel. Those of you who are looking for it, just get to the end of the book or read the whole gospel of Luke again. You'll enjoy this story. It's awesome. Anyway, as the nets were filling up with fish, he realized what this meant, and he cries out, "It's the Lord!" And he grabs his cloak, because he was just wearing his undergarment, you know, out there working with all those fish, and he jumps in the water, swims to shore. Jesus had a fire going. He was already cooking some fish of his own. They ate a meal together, and then afterwards, Jesus says to Peter, "Peter, Do you love me more than these? Do you know that even to this day, Bible scholars are still uncertain. When he said, do you love me more than these, was he talking about the other disciples? Do you love me more than these other guys? Or was he talking about the fish? Do you love me more than fishing? Peter said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he says, and feed my sheep. Now, I could talk. I'm looking at the clock. I know our time is short. I could describe the three different ways Jesus asked the question and the three different ways that Peter answered, and I could give you some really good theological stuff. But for this purpose and for those of you listening, three times he denied the Lord. Now three times he gets to confess. Three different ways the Lord asked the question, and the third time, which is very important, Peter had to finally admit, Lord, you know everything. And you know, and I'm just doing this from the Greek word that is used there. It's a different word. When he says, I love you, it's not the same as the first two times. And the difference means, Lord, you know I love you as much as I can, but I certainly want to love you more. Jesus says, feed my sheep. In other words, Peter, we can take this right back to the beginning. We can start over. Of course, you're not really starting over, Peter, because, Peter, now you know how easy it is to be under pressure and weaken, afraid for your life or afraid for circumstances. You know, Peter, that you're not everything that you want to be, but you can become that. You're just going to have to work a little harder. You're just going to have to trust me a lot more. This is the kind of thing that Jesus was saying to Peter, and this is the kind of thing that we're trying to say to you folks everywhere listening right now. And some are going to be listening tomorrow or the next day as you tune in, and I hope you'll share these words with others and maybe pass it around the family, pass it around the neighborhood, pass it around work. Whatever you can do, tell people, look, he loves you more than you can imagine, and he knows you better than you know yourself. And if you've made a mistake, if you denied him under pressure, if you have failed a test, just know that he's saying, come on, pick yourself up. Let's get back to this, because so many good things, so many important things are just ahead. You see, Jesus needed Peter as much as Peter needed him. Jesus wanted to give Peter that opportunity to be all that Jesus wanted him to be. And that's all that we're asking you. I know this is a different kind of broadcast, and boy, you've had a lot of really important teaching coming over the air with all the different experts in their fields, and certainly the prophetic picture right now is so important, and we all want to get everything answered. We got so many questions, so many things we want to understand. We just can't wait for tomorrow, because we know tomorrow's going to be even more exciting than today. But, you know, the Bible says, take no thought for tomorrow. We've covered that already. Here it is. You are now right here hearing these words, knowing that God is trying to speak to your heart, knowing he's been touching you in his own personal, special way. You know that all he wants to do is make it all right inside, so that no matter how wrong it gets outside, it won't even matter. Get right inside. Let the Lord wrap his arms around you. You know, he said something looking over Jerusalem during that last week as he arrived there. He says, oh, Jerusalem, if only you would let me, I would take you under my wings and shelter you. He was applying prophetic passages from the Old Testament where it actually describes God trying to do that. He wants to spread his wings over us. He wants to shelter us just like a mother hen would do her little chicks. He wants to take care of us. He wants to help us. He wants to get us through whatever comes. It doesn't matter what it is, because God is bigger. God will always be bigger. But like I said earlier, if the door is still shut and you're only listening to him talk from the other side, once in a while, knock a little bit on the door, and you're still closed in, still hiding from all of that love and all of that compassion and everything, you're going to miss all of it. And I'm telling you, and I agree with everybody who has raised concerns in this broadcast and these weeks and months, and I don't know how long, Dorothy, you've been at this for a while, I know, but I'm so thankful you are. I'm so thankful for everyone who's sounding an alarm and trying to wake up a sleeping church and a sleeping world. You need to have assurance in your heart that no matter what happens, God is right there with you. Right there with you. We were shipwrecked with our boat on our first trip trying to get to Haiti. And as I was hanging on to the wreckage with my children beside me, it was late in October, the waters were cold, I was numb. We were all numb from the waist down and barely able to hold on. Fortunately, I had life jackets on everybody, and we were tied to each other with small pieces of rope. But there came a moment where I just couldn't do anything else for my family, and I knew we were at the mercy of God. It was almost dawn, and a little ray of light was trying to pierce through some of the dark black clouds overhead, even while the winds were roaring and the storm was still ongoing. And as I looked up into that little spot in the clouds, I thought to myself, well, at least there's something good about today. And then I closed my eyes in that moment, but as soon as I closed my eyes, I saw an image in my mind. Now, I don't say it was a vision, as like a Bible kind of vision, although I've had those and love to come on another time and talk about it. It's an awesome thing, but not everybody sees visions, but I have had. But this was just probably, you know, a memory of a painted image that I have seen, but it was Jesus on the cross on the hill called Calvary, with a cross on either side. But I remembered seeing this picture in my mind while my eyes were tightly closed, my body frozen, our hanging on, waves splashing in our faces. But I saw this, and it moved my heart so much. And I looked back up in that little space again, up in those clouds, was slightly larger, slight little more light coming through. And I looked in that as though I was looking in through a window to heaven, and I just called out with every ounce of sincerity in my heart, and I said, thank you, Father, for letting me go through this small thing after what you did for me at Calvary. And as I said that, the most incredible peace, most incredible peace, the Bible calls it peace that passes all understanding, this peace just flowed over me. And I turned and looked at my wife, and my wife just happened to turn at that very moment and look at me. She was smiling. I was smiling. I want to pray right now. I want to pray. I want to pray for someone. If there's only one. We've been on this air for 2 hours. We're trying to send this message out to the whole world, and maybe only one is willing to pray with me, but I'm going to pray for you because you are worth this whole night, worth every word that we've spoken, every experience that I've had and others have had to show that God loves us and he most certainly loves you. And I want you to pray with me right now, okay? We only have a moment left. Just pray. Father in heaven, I know that you did everything for love. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. All you're asking us to do, just like the verse says, is to believe. And if we will believe, we will not perish but have everlasting life. But belief is not just saying something with our words. It is doing something with our life. It is acting on it. It is pouring ourselves out to you, placing ourselves in your hands unconditionally. Whatever you want to do with us, we are yours. Please forgive us. We're sorry. Sorry for everything we did that hurt you. Sorry for everything we did that hurt others and hurt ourselves. Please wash it away. Forgive us. Write our name down in your book. And when the time comes, you are going to call names out, call our name, take us home with you. But also stay by our side and help get us through whatever is coming. In Jesus' name, amen.
Well, thank you so much, David. I do hope you get a chance to come back. Everyone said you were very much a blessing.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy. God bless everyone. Thank you so much. Is there a moment for me to give our website?
I've given your website, but we're in recording, so this will go into the archives. Yes, it's... Go ahead and give your website.
I didn't mean to give you a long-winded answer. Yeah, that's fine. You can find us on the Internet if you just search on any search engine for Sailing Missionaries. Just put in Sailing Missionaries. We come up on the top of all the search engines, which is awesome, something our Father has done for us. But the website is called sailingservant.org, O-R-G, and we're also on facebook.com/sailingservant. But again, if you forget that or you lose the paper, just look for Sailing Missionaries on the Internet. Any search engine, you'll find us.
And again, thank you so much for spending what little time you have with us tonight. I know you're very, very busy.
Well, bless you. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed it a great deal. You've been a blessing to me. You've been a blessing to the listeners. And this should be archived in about 20 minutes to share with the world.
All right. Praise the Lord.
So thank you, and good night, Dave.
Good night. Good night to everyone.